unwarranted music opinion. Unwarranted music opinion. I don't care if you don't want to hear my opinion about your robot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to...
All right.
No.
All right.
Ever again. Never again.
You got your one time. This, I'm reeling you back in. You no longer have this privilege.
I'm the host. It's me.
Hello, and welcome back to Unwarranted Music Opinions, the show in which three, and this time four, music fans choose albums this week with an incredibly wide variety and listen to them. At the end of the week, we join together, and we hopefully won't strangle each other when we tell our opinions about these albums. I'm Jacob Lindberg. I'm here with Brian Courtney.
Hello.
Chaz Jenkins.
Hello.
And our guest this week is Joe Lewis.
Hello, hello.
And who are we starting?
Starting with LeBrock. Oh my God, that's why I'm the host.
Stop.
It's LeBrock.
All right, LeBrock is a synthwave duo out of Peterborough, United Kingdom. Their latest release is Real Thing from 2018. Synthwave, if you're not familiar with that genre, it's basically a throwback to 80s pop music with heavy emphasis on synthesizers and just a real different aesthetic than probably what you're used to if you're a child of the 90s or the 2000s. It's a very retro style music, so... Me being a child of the 80s, it's very nostalgic, but there also has some good emphasis on modern production quality, so that's kind of where synthwave is, and LeBrock is probably who I would consider to be one of the better synthwave artists out there.
This, I think, did exceed my expectations for synthwave. You know, going into this, I kind of was expecting something that just totally rode on the nostalgia factor. But as you said, with the modern production techniques, I do think that this thing does sound very shiny and in a good way, not in like a overly polished sort of way. I did feel the production definitely bolstered this. The sound of the synths are really nice. There's a lot of pretty nice synth melodies across the board on this thing. This maybe is like the first synthwave project I've ever heard, so it's hard for me to judge it against the rest of the genre. But... if you say LeBrock is one of the better artists, I would believe you.
Synthwave is a genre that I've kind of dabbled in a little bit. I'm more of a vaporwave kind of guy, or a Simpsons wave. You know, I'm really into that kind of stuff. while the production is probably the most solid thing about this release, my issue with it is that the lyrics are a little generic, and the melodies and music leave a lot to be desired. I found myself... Sorry, Joe, but I found myself a little bored while listening to this. I'm so sorry, but it's just, I was expecting more than what I got. Because I was expecting, like, because it is a little gimmicky, but I was expecting them to go all out with it. And I just, with the generic lyrics, really just felt like they were just being retro for the sake of being retro. But if you think this is the best, I'd hate to hear what other bands this genre has to offer.
I mean, this thing, like, if I put it down to a word, it's okay. I agree with, like, the modern production techniques set it apart. I like the super clean, like, the super clean synths, you know what I mean? And the compositions in general are good. Like, you know, they pass, but it's like, I don't know. I take issue with the songwriting. I think it must be aware of how cheesy it is, I think, because this is sounds like a couple of songs on here, like, remind me straight out of, like, Eye of the Tiger type songwriting, you know? It's, like, very, like... upbeat,
very some anthemic.
Like yeah, somewhat like motivational as well. I mean, I didn't expect anything that was going to be like, wow, they talked about this, or the songwriting is like super ambitious or anything like that. So I got what I expected. I didn't. There's really no part of it I dislike. I don't really hate anything about it. It's just sort of like middle of the road for me. That's just kind of how I feel about it. I can't really complain about anything. It's easy on the ears while it's on.
I think its short length benefits it.
It does for sure. I like that it's not some 40-minute debut or something like that. Like, I do...
Oh, God, that'd be miserable if it was.
You know, I did feel like, for being, I guess you could consider it like wallpaper music, mm-hmm. I did feel like it was on the more positive end of that spectrum. It's only 5 tracks, the longest here being just a touch or almost 6 minutes, the last track, which is probably my least favorite. But other than that, you know, ranging from 3 to about 5 minutes, and I don't feel like any of these tracks really outstay their welcome. The melodies and the choruses, they're not incredible. They're certainly nothing that we haven't heard before, but they're not bad. And I do think, like, I remember the chorus of Real Thing.
Yeah,
I remember too. The chorus of Runaway. And I do like, you know, the synth melodies that pop in on those songs.
See, the problem is, though, that this is only, like, what, 20 minutes? 30 minutes?
It's 20, yeah.
And I felt like I was sitting there for an hour listening to this album. Each track is, like, 5 minutes, and it's just way too long.
Like, if we went down to specific tracks, I think the album has a way stronger, like, front half than it does the second half. I'm not really big on Runaway. I think it goes on just a little too long. But otherwise, like, yeah, like, Real Thing is legitimately, like, a good song, in my opinion, even if the lyrics are super cheesy. It's still, like,
I do like Juice, though. Juice is a good song.
Juice is okay as well. I didn't bother with the instrumentals as either, by the way.
Yeah,
I don't think any of us did.
Because the original release that was originally linked to you all was the one without the
Honestly, though, I think this should have been an instrumental record, because if you're just going to do such generic lyricism, why even bother writing stuff for
They're just placeholders for the vocal melodies,
but,
really.
I mean, yeah. Just replace those with more synths. I think it wouldn't have mattered at all. I honestly would have preferred it just to be instrumental, because from what I gather from the genre, that's typically what it is. I wasn't expecting lyrics at all, actually.
I mean, as far as lyrics go, yeah, they're just placeholders. That's pretty much the way to put it. Like, they're not saying anything amazing. They're not even saying anything that's really that interesting. But I think if they were just synths, I think this would be worse. Even though Vaporwave, from my experience, has been totally instrumental, I think the lyrics here at least set this apart and, like, make me able to remember it and be like, oh, that's LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's generic, uplifting, anthemic stuff, but it's nothing offensive. It's nothing that really makes me cringe or turn away from it.
It doesn't feel fake, you know what I mean? Like, they
right, and I've mentioned this before, just briefly before we started this episode, that it's kind of like the Andrew WK effect, of course, to a lesser extent, to a much lesser extent, where the lyrics might be, you know, simple and have these very simple messages, but the charisma and the personality kind of allows you to believe them instead of feeling like they're fake. And I think that this comes through on this album, again, to a much lesser extent and a lot less subtly than Andrew WK, but it didn't leave me feeling, it didn't turn me away for that reason.
Well, I think, interestingly enough, I hear all these criticisms and I'm like, that's true. But oddly enough, those are the things that I like about synthwave music, that the simple lyrics are a callback to that era of music. Yes, on the face of them, they are very simple, almost cheesy, kind of like tongue-in-cheek kind of things, but that is very indicative of 80s pop and, to a certain extent, 80s rock music. So it's kind of like a homage, I guess. And to Chaz's point, there's a very large section of synthwave that is just instrumental music. I would almost say that vocal synthwave is like maybe a quarter to a third.
Yeah.
Most of it is instrumental. But I prefer vocal synthwave. I guess just it's very nostalgic for me. I think this genre of music is about hooks. And so it's really trying to push those really easy melodies, hooks, things you'll remember.
That's super true, actually, 100% with this album, yeah.
But see, that's the thing. I was expecting it to go all out with it, because when I saw, like, you know, they had the color palette of that classic 80s synthwave look, and they're all posing and being all cool. I was expecting, like, to, like, laugh at how ridiculous and over the top they were going with it, and would have enjoyed it much more, but it felt just so bland, like they were just doing it by the numbers. It was like, this is synthwave, but numbered colored in. You know what I mean? Like, this number here needs to be blue. This number here needs to be green. I was expecting much more than what I got. And that is what makes it the most disappointing for me.
Well, I think synthwave as a genre is pretty by the numbers, because that's the whole point of it.
Yeah, it's not a genre that's known for its experimentation or it's like the bold songwriting, et cetera, so on. Like, you know, it's not like there are any ambitious synthwave conceptual albums about, you know, being in space or some ridiculous.
Very untrue. Macintosh is a beautiful release.
Now, there are sort of subgenres of synthwave, like darkwave, for example, which, yeah, if you're looking for something a little more experimental, a little more complex with the lyrics, I would certainly suggest a band like Carpenter Brute or something like that, with sort of more dark wave elements, kind of a heavier sound. Gunship, another great...
I know about Gunship. They had a synth release last year that I had on my radar.
Yeah, and they just came out with a new album. Gunship is another who I would call really anthemic out there, but very different than LeBrock.
Mm-hmm. Chaz, you were talking about how they could maybe make it, but I think what I would like more out of this genre, or like more, is like just louder synths. Like, just like, let's take it full, like, wall of sound. Like if we're going truly anthemic and blood pumping, and we're going to use modern production techniques, and we want it to exist in the new day while still having the throwback sounds, just make it louder, compress it. You know, just, I think, like, a huge wave of, like,
so, like, Rick Rubin-style synthwave? Yeah, is that what you're, like, talking
just
about?
Extremely, like, almost unbearably loud at first. Like, the first time you hear it, you're like, I don't know about this.
Are we heading into a second loudness war?
Yeah.
I'm feeling a 5 on LeBrock. It's not the worst thing I've heard. It just, I was really disappointed. I was expecting a lot more than what I got, which really sucks because I do like this genre a lot. And going into it, I was really excited and just, I was really let down. And really what does it for me is the lyrics, because I do like the sounds and synths they're using, but just by the numbers, lyrics like that really annoy the crap out of me, because it's like you could have done so much more to elevate this project if you're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they just really half-assed it. It just really sucks for me.
I think I can see the appeal of this for sure. If what you are looking for is this particular sound, I think it's done pretty well. I think that the songs here are... I don't think there's a single song here that's bad. I think for the most part, they're passable to pleasant. So overall, but I've said mostly positive things. I would concur with the criticisms that have been said. I'm just trying to offer, a more positive perspective. But I am kind of in the same boat. I would give this like a strong 5. A couple of these songs might be like a 6. So maybe on a good day, like a light 6 for me.
Yeah, I would go with like a decent 5. I like this. I do. It's pleasant while it's on. It's not offensive. It's not really bad at any point on it. It's just, I think the issue is it's not a sound I go for, and it's not, because you've mentioned there's a nostalgia factor here for you, and that will not exist for me because I was not conceived. So, yeah.
This is exactly what I expected from all of you.
Yeah.
So I have to say that right now, that I was like, they're going to give this like a middle of the road score. So. That's fair. I can certainly see that. So there'll be no beatings or anything like that.
Thank God.
So
I was so worried. What score would you give it?
Honestly, it's my own record, but I would probably give it a 6 on a good day. Like, this is not something I listen to every day. This is not something I sit down. It's not appointment listening, right? But it's something I enjoy, especially if it's like a sunny day and I want to roll the windows down and just kind of like feel good.
Mm.
This is the kind of thing.
I will concur. If I were to listen to sound while like driving down the road, it'd probably feel like an 8 in that moment because it's just the perfect music to do that with.
Right. Yeah, there's different contexts for listening as well. So like under different circumstances, this thing might be, but I don't know. I just find myself kind of, there's other synth-based music.
Just like a squeaky chair, just it probably didn't come through in the mics.
Joe's actually just in a clown costume.
The album I picked is Sailing the Seas of Cheese by Primus. Primus is definitely something I call one of my favorite bands of all time. They're a band whose catalog I'm very familiar with. I've been listening to them since middle school. I just love the raw, visceral sound they have, and Les Claypool is a phenomenal bassist who I just hearing him play just blows me away every time I hear it. This album I'm a little familiar with. It features their like most well-known song, Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. It's kind of a hot take here, but as a Primus fan, I'm more a later Primus work than an early Primus work. Like, I'm a Pork Soda, Tales from the Punch Bowl, Green Nihide, which is actually my favorite Primus record. I'm more into that sound, so going to this album, I was a little, like, skeptical about their earlier sound, but I wasn't too disappointed. I actually thoroughly enjoyed this record, but enough of me blabbing. What'd you guys think?
I am very glad I listened to this thing a few more times before I came in, because this was literally one of my least favorite things I'd ever had to listen to for the show, like 3 days ago.
Even Diet Sig?
not that bad. Calm down. But like it wasn't
well,
far off.
Well,
don't
say something like that.
It wasn't far off, like honestly. Like I legitimately was so displeased every time I had to put this
which
on.
Which is so surprising. I was expecting you to love this.
Yeah, I was immediately
because this kind of sounds right up your alley.
That's why I said I'm glad I listened to it again, because I took like 2 days away from it after hearing it two or three times and just got like a fourth listen in, and like here we go. I'd been using my headphones, and like the problem is they're closed back, so it's like in general they're fine, but like with music like this, which is very dense and like very like in your face, a lot's going on. It's hard. It's not exactly easy to pick apart. It makes it like just way harder to get into. And so I just put it on my speakers, and then it, like I was in songs like Is It Luck or Instantly, they're like just night and day. Like from I hated it before and like kind of like the vocal line, but now it's like, yeah, wow, I get why people like Les Claypool now. Wow, completely flipped on this thing. I still really dislike the opening track though.
The intro?
Not the Sailing Seas of Cheese 47, like the first actual track.
Here
Come the Bastards? That's a great song.
That's a very good song.
Cannot stand
it. It's got an awesome like intro. You just you want to sing along to.
The kind of dirgy like intro with the bass plug line, tedious to me, man. It still gets on my nerves.
Wow. I don't expect that at all, because that sound and like when you see them perform and you just want to mosh to it, it's awesome.
I
feel like it's a perfect
anything.
Mood setter for this album. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great just way to introduce it. It may not be, you know, the most memorable chorus, the most memorable bass hook, but it is a good way to set the album up for what's about to come.
I think my only issue with it is that it's a little slow at times, and for a prime, and that's why I like their later stuff, because they get way more energetic, in my opinion, in their later releases. This album does have some slow parts, and for Primus, I'm not really into that. I feel like
which parts are you referring to?
Those damned blue collar tweakers. It's a little slow for me, and American Life, especially, is a pretty.
You just
slow.
Named two great songs.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they're bad. I just personally
American Life is one of the best songs on the album, especially lyrically. Like, because that's one of the few moments on the whole album. Because mostly it's just mostly nonsense. they find like some funny or interesting concept, like Sergeant Baker or Jerry was a race car driver. They find some funny interesting concept and they try to flesh it out over a song. American Life's one of the few moments on the album where they actually make like a pointed sort of political statement.
Lyrically it's
pretty subtle, like you don't necessarily realize it.
Yeah, I still thought it was nonsense. I'm not catching this at all. It's one of my favorites on the record.
It has like two or three stories of like immigrants coming in trying and basically being unable to move forward in life, and it says this is American Life, so it's about these immigrants coming in. Well, the last verse on this song is about a veteran who was born in America, and the last line is he was born into American life. So it's making the statement where like unable to move forward, you know, class wise, even if you were born into it, and even if you served in the military.
Well, no, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you there. I think lyrically it's one of the strongest songs on the album, but just sonically, it's just not what I go to when I want to hear some Primus. But that's just a personal opinion. I totally agree, though, that lyrically it's a very strong track. Songs like Jerry Was a Race Car Driver, mm-hmm. Tommy the Cat, Is It Luck.
God, Is It Luck is really good.
Is It Luck is a fantastic
Jesus.
Song.
It is just, I love that. I love pretty much every lick on here is like, it's like one of the, it's probably the only song on here I would call like extremely energetic that gets me into it that I'm not laughing at. I'm like, this is a very visceral, like good feeling. But otherwise, this thing's a mixed bag, because there's a track like that, and then we have, like, Sathington Waltz, like, which is just like Here Come the Bastards. I mean, it's just patience testing. It's, like, for me, it's just aggravating. Like, when we listen to God, We, and Satan, that album is as much of a mess as this is, but I enjoy more of that mess. I think it's way funnier. I think it's way more gritty in some ways. I think here, we're not getting the grittiness or the laughs, I think, and except for on like Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. We're not getting the laughs that we get on Ween with like Lim Lip and stuff like that. We're getting technical bass playing, and you're not gonna get, and I've never heard bass played like this, as far as like, so I get the big appeal of like and the sound of this band in general, but I'm not a technical dude. But I'm not an instrument guy.
Primus isn't a comedy band. They write songs about silly stuff, but they are a tried and true band with masterful abilities.
Yeah, I think that the appeal to this is quite different than God, We, and Satan.
I just think that appeal doesn't reach me.
I don't know. I listened to this, of course. I'd heard Primus before, and so I listened to this, and I'm like, is this a meme band? Like, that's exactly, you know, like, of course the quality is there. I mean, Les Claypool is an amazing musician. That cannot be denied at all or even challenged. When I listen to a song like Fish On, and I'm like, are we talking about fishing here?
That's a great track.
It is. That
is a wonderful track.
But I feel like it's indicative of the whole point here. Like, I understand sort of the influence of this album, okay? In 1991, these are the albums that came out. Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Nevermind, Octoon Baby, Use Your Illusion. I mean, so it gets lost in there. Much like Faith No More, you know, that early 90s, these different kinds of sounds just get drowned out by grunge and alternative. And I see the appeal to someone who likes really strong bass playing or really strong, you know, instrument usage as a whole. But after, like, the fourth song, I'm like, okay, you know, dude, I get it. You're really good at bass. Like, that's kind of how I feel.
I don't know. I feel like it's technical, sure, but it's so stylized that it has a lot of personality. And there are super well-written, memorable bass lines. Like, it's not just a display of technique or ability. It's genuinely hooky, catchy, and memorable stuff that's just fun to listen to.
And it's not just Les Claypool's bass playing. Their guitarists and drumming are just as masterful, and they work so well together. And sure, they're writing about silly stuff, but for 91, for this band with their caliber to write songs about a race car driver or Granddad's Little Ditty.
Or Tommy the Cat.
Or Tommy the Cat.
Or Tom Waits on vocals being Tommy the Cat.
Like, Red Hot Chili Peppers were, like, doing this, but, like, more in a poppier direction. These guys were taking it and just went right out of left field with their funk metal sound. And what makes it so appealing is that they know they're good, but they're not taking themselves too seriously, because they're writing about songs like that. And that's why I love this band so much. Because, sure, it's funny in the sense of, like, ooh, I can't believe they're writing a song about this kind of stuff. Or their album's called Seas of Cheese, you know. But it's just so fun to listen to. While Brian said, I do agree to an extent, like, it's a little tedious in some parts, but the positives outweigh the negatives by far on this release to me.
You mentioned Sadington Waltz, and I think that the short little interlude tracks, you know, we could probably do without them, but overall, it's a 45-minute album. I found it to be super easy to listen to. The moments that you mentioned, Blue Collar Tweakers, and which other song did you mention?
American Life,
yeah. I think those are two great songs. I think that basically every, like, fully fleshed out song on this album, there's not one that isn't great. You know, 11 would maybe be the weakest point, in my opinion, but overall, like, this album, like, I listened to this thing blasting it in my car while I was driving, and just the appeal, I feel like, is totally in the energy, the instrumentation, the personality, and it's just a whirlwind the whole way through.
For sure. And what I love most about Primus is that each release sets up this atmosphere and tone. Jacob and I were talking before the episode that, like, this album feels very post-apocalyptic, and what I love about my favorite Primus record, Green Nihide, it just makes me feel like I'm sitting on the back porch in the bayou with a double-barreled shotgun just waiting for something to come out of the woods. Like, so this album gives me that same feeling, and each other release, too. That's why I love Primus so much. They make me feel something that, and I just want to get up and punch something.
They're extremely unique.
I think it's funny that Chaz's criticism of LeBrock is that they don't take themselves seriously, and that his praise of Primus is that they don't take themselves seriously.
Well, it's the same thing done differently and more and just better. Like, you know, I really like music that sounds amateurish, but there's a good way to do it and there's a bad way to do it.
I do like most of the tracks here. It's just that, like, the ones I don't like, I really don't like. Like, Here Come the Bastards, I can't be convinced. I've heard it enough now. I skipped it on my fifth listen.
Would you at least, like, want to listen to other stuff by them, or is this kind of like a...
This isn't like a hard no on them.
I think this is a good introduction into the band.
It wouldn't have been a hard no even if I didn't like it, because I would at least explore... Because they sound unique enough, and, like, there are things that I like about this that are intriguing enough to pull me back in. But, like, it's really the interludes. Jacob made a good point. Like, anything that's not a full song on here is guaranteed to be bad.
And I think that was just a product of the times where, like, you kind of have to have interludes.
No, I think that it was a conscious decision on the band's part. I don't think that they're as bad.
Because there's themes and concepts that they're working, like fishing. That's a typical Primus theme that they work around. Like, their most well-known song of their debut is John the Fisherman, which is a phenomenal track.
They often, you know, they take different angles on fishing.
I mean, that's kind of cool.
That's what they do.
But
I know it sounds so ridiculous, but it's a legit thing that they write about most of the time. Like those, I can't explain it, but I don't know.
I don't know. My favorites would probably be like Sergeant Baker, which is a song we haven't talked about a lot. It's really, really good. I wish it
opened
the
chorus
album.
On that.
Left. Right. Oh, those are my favorite. I'm a huge vocals dude. We've learned at this point, I'm not huge in the instrumentation. You guys get talking about melodies and stuff. I'm tuning out. I don't care. I'm looking for memorable vocal moments.
I love Les's voice in any of his albums.
Oh, is that Les?
Yeah, Les is the vocalist. He plays, while he's singing, he's playing those bass licks.
That's hilarious.
It's amazing. And when he performs, he like thumps around and stomps. Like, it's
you
so cool.
You should see his get up when he, like, and you should watch some music
He
videos.
Has like steampunk gungles on and a huge top hat. He's amazing.
Yeah, no, I like the super memorable vocal stuff on here is obviously my favorite. Sergeant Baker, Is It Luck, and parts of Fish On that I remember.
Jerry was a race car driver.
Jerry was a race car driver. It's probably the most.
I love his when he screams in while he's playing. Oh,
pretty awesome.
Yeah, and to speak to Chaz's point, I think the best thing about Primus is that when you listen to it or you see it, you know this is Primus. It doesn't sound like a knockoff of somebody else. Like, this is Primus. And they certainly have created their own aesthetic, which is actually hard to do, you know, because a lot of bands try to incorporate things from other bands that are successful, and they end up sounding like this amalgamation of different things that doesn't quite reach any of those points very well. But Primus has its own kind of thing, and so I can appreciate that, even if I don't necessarily love it. But
I'm feeling an 8 out of 10 on Seas of Cheese. I just love this band so much. I was originally going to give this a 7, but just the more I talk about it, it is a great release, and I can see why it's one of their more critically acclaimed albums. It's still not my favorite one. Yo, Primus sucks. Let's get it.
Primus does suck. I'm feeling a strong 8 on this one. This was a super fun album. It's so consistent.
Man, strong 8. That blows me away.
Like, I'm looking at the track listing here, and, you know, every single full song is great at the very least. And Jerry Was a Race Car Driver and Tommy the Cat are like solid 9s.
Wow.
Of the Primus's best well-known songs.
Right.
For sure.
Interludes aren't bad, I don't think. Is It Luck is great too. That would be like my number 3. Or okay. American Life. I could keep naming songs because they're
all
so good.
That's so.
It's just.
I think I've made history today.
It's a great driving album. I'd heard this album before. A few times, but it's been years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was probably like 14, 15, and it really wasn't my sound.
Oh, timid little 14-year-old Jacob was probably shaking in his boots.
He called you timid.
I don't know, I was listening to a lot of Crosby, Stills, and Nash at the time, but coming back to this after several years. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, 100%, he loves Neil.
1,000,000%. But anyway, coming back to this, this was just a ton of fun. And I really, really enjoyed it.
All right, so
stand with me, Joe.
I'm not going to give it a 5 because I don't think it's mediocre. So I would go a solid 6 because it certainly has strong instrumentation. They have a clear aesthetic. It's just not, it's not one of those albums I listen to and think, man, I need to listen to this again. I think it probably suffers a little bit from trying to be too different, I feel like. It's almost, I don't know. It's hard to put my finger on, but it makes me just want to listen to Modest Mouse. Like, if I want this, I'm going to listen to Modest Mouse. Like, this kind of, like, goofy, off the wall with, you know.
Well, like 2000s Modest Mouse? Like, that's the closest comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, when you mention Modest Mouse and, like, 90s Modest Mouse, it would be totally different. But, like, I could see going for, like, Good News.
Right.
I can kind of see the comparison.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. I think probably inspired a whole new, not new, but, you know, if you're a bass player or you're a musician, Primus, you look at this and that's what you aspire to as far as skill wise, I would say.
It's a mixed bag for me because there are a lot of songs in here that are really good and only growing on me, but I would hesitate to call anything on here great, in my opinion. And there are some tracks that really, really annoy me, especially the closer and the opener. I mean, man, it's like I can't even sit through Here Come the Bastards. It's so irritating on my ears. It's like
a wrong opinion, Brian. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I've been here many times. Like, and I like Jerry Was a Race Car Driver, but like not as much as I like a Is It Luck or a Sergeant Baker or an American Life. Tommy the Cat's also pretty good. That's just how I feel. I feel like all this is pretty good. Fish On is pretty good. those blue collar tweakers, pretty good. Like, I'm not really sold anything here. It is way better than when I was listening to it initially, but I mean, way better than where I was isn't amazing. And I do find difficulty in getting past my hang-ups with this album. But I mean, that could change. I can see myself going back to this and just giving it another shot, because I think there's just a level of difficulty here that's really hard to appreciate.
And I implore you to check out their other stuff, because some of their most popular songs are on their other albums, and those albums have like their own style and atmosphere that you can probably enjoy more than this. So I highly recommend to just kind of explore their catalog at your own discretion.
Yeah, originally didn't like this, like was really sitting on a 4, but I'd give it a strong 6 now. Like, I do enjoy it. I do think the weirdness appeals to me, and I'm slowly getting past the difficulty, I think, now. I just wish I maybe had more time with it, or heard it in other contexts, like in the car or something like that, because that may have changed my opinion even more, but that's where I'm at right now. And I gotta say, I am glad I went back to it, and I may be glad I went back to it again in the future, because we've seen with The Walking, you know, like, I wish I could just go back and hear it the amount of times I needed to review it. Mm. But I feel like I kind of got there here, but we'll see what the future holds.
You think you know me?
So the next artist we're going to talk about is JPEG Mafia. He's an experimental hip-hop artist who's been active for a few years as far as I can tell. But he really blew up last year with his second studio album, Veteran, which is an experimental hip-hop opus, in my opinion. It's like 20-some-odd tracks, most of which are like 2 minutes, like maybe a little over that. There's one 3-minute track on here that I can recall. It's very strange, but I think it's one of the very few experimental hip-hop albums I've heard that uses elements of modern-day trap, like trap techniques, and then injects the elements of experimental hip-hop into that, and like they just mix so well. Yeah, I gotta just go ahead. Yeah.
So, I didn't know what to expect, because my little introduction to this was Thug Tears, how they sampled a clicking pen, which blew my mind. I was not expecting that at all. I was expecting like maybe something like Brockhampton or Death Grips, because that's really what Brian's like into when he mentions experimental hip hop.
I'm offended by how accurate that is.
But I think this even goes beyond that in terms of like beat work here, because what they're sampling here is you would never expect. I don't know what better way to describe it, but this is just so different.
There's some really smart samples on
Absolutely.
Here, I would argue.
This is an amazing album. No question. Lyrically and musically, it's just an awesome release.
I did it. Woo!
I wouldn't say issues with it. I just think I love it, but it's not for me. I'll probably never listen to this again just because of how crazy it is. It kind of scared me a couple times.
That's what I said, and here I am.
I was a little spooked a couple times, but I definitely do love it. I think my favorite song is Panic Emoji.
Yes! Mm. God! That is such a good opinion! Oh my God! Dude! Dude, I never in a million years did I think anyone was going to come in. Panic Emoji's like top 3.
It's a beautiful song.
God!
The shower sample and just him mumbling about it. Like,
they recorded it while he was in the shower.
I know. God. And like while he was having the panic attack. It was so amazing. But I'd love like just what that song's about, and it's such a beautiful message, and to dealing with that sort of stuff.
I don't even think it's like particularly deep or beautiful. Like
it's just sincere. It's one of the most sincerest songs I've ever heard.
It's very millennial, and that's how I feel about this whole album. It's super millennial, or like Gen Zers like us who are like around.
He mentions
like age
Trump
20.
A bunch of times, and like
I just
and
love
racist,
like
and like
it's
white
like
racist
very,
white people.
It's like on a very visceral level. It's like this thing like. A lot of the stuff that, like, I feel about, like, being young and stuff. And you know, there's stuff, there's obviously allusions to here, like, Peggy, like, you know, living black is a different experience. Mm-hmm. But, and I don't necessarily relate to those. I just sympathize with them. But, like, on a gut level, some of the things he says I just relate to really hard. And it's less the things he says and more the energy on this album that I just relate to. Like, this,
real.
Like, complete, this anger to the point of satire.
Mm-hmm. I love two things. I love the track listing. Like the names, like I cannot effing wait until Morrissey dies. That's a great track name.
He starts off by listing like some very, what's the word I'm looking for here? I guess just problematic
yeah.
people in the music industry. Varg Vikernes, I don't know.
My second favorite song is Macaulay Culkin. That's a really good song. I think.
God, Chaz, you have some good. opinions today, man. Yeah, those are like the two most underrated tracks on this thing.
For real. I really enjoyed both of those songs.
But even like the most well-known songs, like Thug Tear is a great song, Rainbow Six is a really cool song, Curb Stomp is a dark closer. Yeah. Like, and that's what I said when I was scared. Like, the song, I can't remember which, but the lyric, like, waiting on the block with my Glock clocked.
That's I'm Rainbow
like,
Six.
Yeah, when I'm listening to that, I'm like, yeah, me too, dude, but I'm not wearing any colors, and I got a water gun, but I'm here to support you. Like, because he's talking about killing racist white people. I'm like, yeah, dude, but not me. Like, I'll support you all the way, but I'll squirt him with my water gun. Like, that's what I get when I listen to this album. It's like,
wow.
I feel what he's going through, but I can't relate at all. So just, I get this scary feeling when I'm listening to this because I know, I get it. I totally get it. It's just, that's why I probably will never go back to it because it's just so, it's too much for me. Mm. But what I listen to, I love because it's real shit. Everything that's going on is pretty relevant in this album, especially in the time it came out, for sure.
I enjoy this album, but I don't know if I go much farther than just enjoying it. I do think that the biggest draw for me, I think, would be the lyrics. I have a harder time with the production. Mm-hmm. And that isn't to say that I don't appreciate what he's doing and all the risks that he's taking and the creativity, because I do think that when it works out here, it works out incredibly well.
Man sampled ASMR mouth sounds. Who in their right mind would think that's a good idea? And it works. I just felt so scared and tense while just all these things were happening in my brain while I was listening to this album. And I don't know if I love it or hate it, but it was just so much. I was like, wow, this man is a madman.
I think my favorite track here, production-wise, just in general, is Baby I'm Bleeding, which is probably the easiest track for someone to love.
That was the first track that, like, that was like the start. I think like a year ago when this came out, that was the start of this like parasite in me. But like, because it's the easiest to get into. It's pretty straightforward as far as experimental hip hop goes. Like that is that song is pretty much like by the numbers experimental hip hop.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that track. I enjoyed a lot of the other tracks here. I don't think that there's a single one that I didn't like. However, Chaz, you mentioned not really being able to connect with this thing. I really felt that, you mm-hmm. know, and I felt like the more I listened to it, the less I really could connect with it.
But the production and lyricism is so strong and real and sincere that even though I don't connect to it, I understand. And that's why I love it more than maybe Jacob does, because I understand what he's going through and what he's talking about, especially on Panic Emoji. What a beautiful song.
Yeah, for me, it's a very visceral connection, and like it's basically the sentiment that I get. And it's no particular lyrical moment that I actually like. I'm like, I can think of very few that I'm like, yeah, I really identify with that.
Even I mean, the sentiment is one that, like, obviously, you know, I think the lyrics here are great. I just don't connect with, I guess, Peggy. Mm-hmm. Like his personality, I like him sometimes, and then sometimes he's worn off me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit. Like, I've listened to this album. I listened to it a few times when it came out, and then three times to prepare for this. And I actually went down on my last listen, just because I felt like, except for a few tracks here, Macaulay Culkin, Panic Emoji, Baby I'm Bleeding, aside from a few tracks here, really there weren't any more that I went further than just enjoying and not really feeling that much of a connection with them, not really feeling like I wanted to return to them all that much. And instrumentally, I think that the creativity is fantastic and the different sampling. I think it's a really boundary pushing album, but I don't think that always equates to a song that I'm going to want to come back to.
Okay.
Or something that is even really that pleasing to the ears.
Mm-hmm.
Even though obviously Dissonance is fine. Sometimes I felt that the production and the style didn't really work with the songwriting all that well.
I agree with Jacob. Baby I'm Bleeding is clearly the entry point for this album. Panic Emoji is the best song.
Y'all are great. Man, I love y'all.
So Primus is an 8 now?
Nah. Oh,
so this album is 100% self-produced, which I find to be remarkable.
It's all Peggy.
Words I would use to describe it: glitchy, frantic, even at times. And I say those things because I think the production of the album is very much symbolic of Peggy the person. What the sense I get from his lyrics is that there are a lot of things going on in his head. There's a lot of things going on in his world. And they don't always make sense, and they don't always go together, and sometimes they're really hard to listen to or deal with. For me, coming from a military family, I see a track listing called DD Form 214, yeah. And I'm like, what is going on here? So he was in the Air Force for 4 years, and he comes out, and he's talking about all this pain that I feel inside. Baby, you gotta be kidding me. And I'm like, I grew up on 90s funkadelic, you know, Dre, Snoop, Warren G, Ice Cube, all that. So that was
West Side.
They talk about what their life is, but they talk about it from an external perspective. Whereas Peggy, he's going in. Like, he's going inside. He's talking about how he feels, not about how much, like, what it's...
The aura of it.
Yeah. He's like, I'm more Hades than Heracles. I'm like, that f***ing lyric. Hmm. I mean, it says a lot. Like, someone would look at him as, like... Or anyone who comes out of the military and they're like, oh my gosh, you're a hero, you're serving our country. And he's like, mm-mm, that's a dark place.
Mm.
But in all that in the context of him talking about, you know, I get so lonely, I just can't let anybody hold me. I'm like, this dude's in pain.
And I think this is what Jacob's talking about it's hard to relate to it. And mine too, as I mentioned with my joke comment earlier, he's very violent. And he's talking a lot about hurting many different types of people. And, you know, you listen to gangster rap, which is kind of the same thing, but it's played up more as a persona. Peggy here is not joking.
This is totally a persona. Really? Yeah. You didn't think this was like...
I felt like he meant what he was talking about.
I think that these are like real frustrations. He's just taking them to their extremes.
I don't know.
To make
the production and sound and feeling I was getting made me think that this was legit.
No, it's dark. It's an exercise.
Okay.
I feel like... If he didn't write this, he would be doing it. It's almost like this is a coping mechanism for him. That's what I got from it.
I absolutely agree.
I don't know. It's hard to judge. You can't really psychologically discern things about an artist from their art.
Like, if I were guessing, I guess...
Well, then why do we have art? That's one of the whole points of art, is to look at the art as a representation of the individual.
Sure, but it's enhanced. But, like, it's always going to be more played up because you're getting in a place where you can express yourself and you get this kind of adrenaline feeling where it's like, and you got to go as hard as you can because in that moment, in my opinion, I'm not saying this for Peggy, I'm saying in general for artists, when rappers go really hard on tracks like this frustration's from a real place. They might have some real hate in their heart for the system and the things that have put them down or the people they're talking about, but they would never act upon that hatred, so they put it into their art to exercise it. That's how I've always seen it, and that's what I see here. I don't think he would ever actually hurt anyone because he knows that that's really wrong and really messed up. But I think he also knows what he's talking about is really wrong and really messed up. And this is the way you deal with that. You put it out there while also getting your own aggression out to heal yourself.
I agree completely. Yeah, I definitely think that's what the lyrics are doing on this album. It doesn't take away from any of the feelings. You know, even if they're
taken
to their extreme, it doesn't make, it doesn't change the sentiment, and it doesn't change what he's saying, and it doesn't change the power of, you know, the words that he's written down on paper.
A lot of times with kind of what you're talking about, there's an entertainment factor that people are going for. Like, yes, I'm trying to get this out, but I'm also enhancing my persona because I want to be entertaining, because I need to be entertained to sell records or whatever. I'm not entertained by this album. I don't get that sense that he's going for entertainment. I feel like he's throwing this in my face.
That's a good way to put it.
Like, it reaches out and grabs me and doesn't let go. That's how I feel about it. And that's a compliment. That I'm not saying that negatively. I feel like that this, it just grabs me.
It's like watching performance art, for sure. I think this is like really a performance art hip-hop album where it's like, you don't have to agree with what I'm saying, you don't have to feel what I'm saying, but I'm going to, as Joe said, grab you and tell you how I'm feeling and not going to let go until I'm finished.
I would agree that everything about this album comes together to make his point. Even if it doesn't grab me musically all the time, it definitely achieves its, I guess, artistic intent.
I don't know. The more I listen to this thing, man, I think the first like 6 or 7 tracks are flawless. Like, they are just incredible. From 1539 North Calvert to just killed rock and roll, actually, all that far down the track listing. Songs like Rainbow Six.
Rock and Roll is Dead. Is that the one you're
Yeah, Rock and Roll is Dead. Like, so from like 1539 North Calvert to Rock and Roll is Dead, flawless. Even after that, going into like I Can't Wait Till Morrissey Dies, another great song. Love Panic Emoji. Love Macaulay Culkin. Even love Williamsburg, even though it goes on maybe a touch too long, but it's not like bad. You know what I mean?
Curb Stomp is an amazing closer.
Curb Stomp is a great closer.
It's a good period on this entire experience.
Last three tracks are flawless. I love throughout this whole album. There's this sample. I don't know what it is. That it's on Rainbow Six in Spades. It's that. That's all over this album.
I love his sample of Edge's WWE theme song, the You Think You Know
Me.
Yes,
I was wondering if anyone else would notice that. I heard that, and I'm like, oh, crap.
But yep. it makes it just every time it happens, I get shivers. Every time he plays that sample, I get shivers. I'm like, ugh.
My favorite sample right now, because it's always changing, is probably the YouTube video sampled on Rock and Roll is Dead. Big Daddy Hopper coming to you with the Kember 19. Things ought to be pretty good.
Mine's the Counter-Strike sample. That just put a smile on my face.
That's the best one.
That put a smile on my face. Like, team, follow me.
And as he says, that sample's happening, he just goes, yeet. Woo! Very good. There's so many like qualities of this album I love. Like, we've talked about how it comes together emotionally. Love pretty much all the beats on here. The lyrics have very few flaws. Tons of wrestling references, tons of video game references.
A lot of pop culture references, which I like.
It kind of reminds me
of Beastie Boys a little bit. They do kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's a lot of pop culture references, you're right, except where the Beastie Boys was the late 80s, this is, you know,
now
the current day. Yeah.
And 90s wrestling, weirdly, which is pretty popular.
Dude, wrestling is still one of the hugest thing around. Like, it's crazy. No, it is.
Not half as big as you. Trust me, an avid pro wrestling fan, it's not half as big as it was
You're
in the 90s.
You're a wrestling fan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Me too.
Did you like the Mankind line?
Yes.
Sock it to him like Mankind?
Yes.
Oh, he said that. I was like, wow. There's some modern, he likes modern wrestling too.
I met Mick Foley.
Oh, that's sick.
I got him to do Bang Bang. It brought a tear to my eye.
WWE is a multi-billion dollar company. I'm just going to say that when we're talking about how not big wrestling is.
I didn't mean to get bodied.
Joe came down to spit some facts. Like.
Anyway.
This album, for me personally, is like a strong 6-7 on a good day.
Wow, you went down a lot more than I thought you would.
Well, it was,
that's okay.
It was a 7. But again, the more I listened to it, I was kind of expecting the music
to click
and open up, and it never really did, except for on a few tracks.
Sure.
I feel like I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on what he releases in the future. For the most part, I really, really like his persona. I really, really like what he's saying, and I really just appreciate all the creativity. And I feel like he has so much potential to keep creating amazing music.
In my limited experience with experimental hip-hop, and I'm branching out more and more, but like I love that this has and listen to some modern, you know, like Death Grips is pretty contemporary. Clipping is someone I'm getting into now. They've really only blown up since the 2010s. Like, he's the first one to really include elements of trap, like proudly on the. And I think that does a lot for the genre. I think it's going to open up a lot of avenues because not only does it work on this album, it's like amazing.
And it's blown up. It's become fairly
this
popular.
This album became huge. It is crazy the come up Peggy has had. I would compare it to Brockhampton's come up. Like, he's touring with Vince Staples now. A year and a half ago, no one even knew who this guy was, more or less. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that to be mean, because I think he'd say the same thing. He had 10 people come to his shows, listen to songs off Black Ben Carson. And now veteran, night and day. Concerts packed everywhere. I think this album has a measurable, amazing quality to it. But going just off of me, yeah, super creative, super catchy, only getting better each time I listen. Love the lyrics, love the energy and performances, love the sentiment, love the kookiness. Yeah, man, strong 9. Jesus Christ.
Strong 8 on this album. And the only reason I say 8 and it's not higher, like I gave Iridescence a 9 because I love that so much. I'll probably go back to Iridescence and more Brockhampton stuff. I'm probably never going to come back to this album.
I can't stop coming back to
this. Just because of how emotional, kind of terrifying, and I can't really relate to much of what's being said here. I enjoy it so much because of how creative, poignant, and relevant it is. That I can't help but give it a strong score like that. And I cannot wait to see what else he releases in the future. He's going places.
I'm going to go with a strong 8 as well. I actually, just as we were talking, my thoughts coalesced more. I'd originally wanted to go 7, but then I went back to like my last listen of the album, which, like Chaz, will probably be my last listen ever, because I don't know that I can take listening to this album anymore. It's so much. And that, again, is a compliment, because it's just, I listen to this, and first of all, this isn't normally the genre of music I listen to, but I listen to this, and I'm just being pulled into something that's more than I feel like the sum of its parts. And it's dark, and it's scary. It's a little irreverent at times, antagonistic, raw, but it's real, and I feel like that is something. I mean, I'm so tired of Kanye. I'm so tired of, like, just what hip-hop has become.
Okay, hold
like,
on.
Like, this needs, like, hip-hop needs this.
This is great. Can we talk about Libtard Anthem, a song it's still one of my least favorites, but it's still amazing. I think it's really funny. I'm sorry. I just forgot to shout out that track.
So, yeah, I'm going to go with an 8 as well. I definitely, this is one of those people I'm going to earmark. I want to hear his next album, and I want to see what it's going to be.
I think everyone does. I think it's like this is a big career moment for him. This is like, this could potentially be his peak, you know, all things considered. I would not be surprised if this went on to be one of my favorite albums of all time. I adore this thing. I cannot stop listening to it. Like, God, it's just in my brain basically 24/7.
The album that I chose is the self-titled debut by The Raincoats, who were a, I guess, art punk, post-punk band that came up in England in the late 70s, had their first album, their self-titled debut, released on Rough Trade Records, which was a very, very influential and important indie label at the time that, you know, would later go on to release music by bands like The Smiths. It kind of blew up in the 80s. And a lot of other really great stuff happening on Rough Trade around the same time. But The Raincoats came out, and it's just a strange and very unique blend of styles here. It's basically just, you know, you've got these four women coming together, you got someone playing violin, you got some scratchy guitars,
I love the violin.
You got some weird bass lines and some strange percussion, and they're just coming up with some songs and playing them. This is sort of a one-of-a-kind record. I'm interested to hear what you have to think or have to say about it.
How do I start this off?
Oh, I feel like you're just... I feel like, Jacob, if this... Just, man, I love you. I just know it's nothing personal, all right? Like, if we're all kind of low on this thing, it's not an attack on you.
I'm not low, but I'm not high either. I loved this record on my first listen, but on my second listen, I did notice some things that, like, really didn't click as much with me as I thought they would, if that makes sense. Let's get them out of the way. My favorite tracks, no question, are No Side to Fall In and Lola. No Side to Fall In is incredibly catchy, and like the catchiest song on the album, like even more catchy than Lola. But Lola is a wonderful cover.
It's the best cover of all time.
It's one of the best.
It's better. It's the best cover of all
Someone
time.
Didn't
That's
watch
debatable.
The Denzel Curry Bulls on
it
Parade.
Is
Ooh,
better.
That was so good. Did you see that? Oh.
I listen to that more often than Jeff Buckley's cover of Hallelujah, and that's like the second best
what
cover.
What about
like,
Jimi Hendrix Along the Watchtower?
This is like this. I'll rant about Lola in a minute. Just keep going.
So, this is kind of like another Minutemen situation, but not as like negative as I was on that. Where I can respect what's going on here, and I do like it for the most part. I don't love it, though. It's definitely not my taste, I guess I could say, because there's a lot of songs over here, like some great lyricism and great things being done here for 79, but I'm not the target audience by far, and I probably won't come back to this as much as I'd like to, but there's a few songs that I really do love. Like I said, No Side to Fall In and Lola are great tracks, and a lot of these other ones are well done, especially No Looking. What a very great closer, and a very kind of like Veteran, a great period to the end of this entire experience of when they keep repeating that phrase over and over, and it gets more frantic as it goes along. It kind of gave me shit. It gave me chills, especially my first listen. I was like, whoa, where did that come from? What is happening? But overall, the sound and these melodies and riffs are just not my cup of tea.
If I had to pick a phrase to describe this album, I would say endearing roughness, I think, is kind of where I went. I feel like there's an assault here on the entire process of making music. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. like just the scratchy guitars and the violin. It's just so underproduced, I guess is the word.
It is. The vocals are like everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't think they mixed them at all.
They just, like, there'll be like two people singing at the time, and then one person will drop out, and then a different person. Like, it's just like they're throwing the vote. It's like they have a ball, like you can't sing unless you have the ball, and they're throwing it to each other during the entire recording process.
So I appreciate that. I listen to this album, and the first thing I think of is Sleater-Kinney. Mm. Like, I want to hear Sleater-Kinney.
Big bang, because I've been banging on about Sleater-Kinney for a while now, because I've really loved the Woods that I've been listening to on repeat for a while. Like, it's moved into, like, one of my favorites, and so I did get that as well, listening to the Raincoats.
I have a whole thing here on Lola. I mean, it's just so good.
I mean, Jesus. It's, like, far and away the best song on here. Like, and the fact that it's a cover, I was a little sad to figure that out, because to me, if they had written this song, I'd have been like, not fair. I'm like, this is one of the best punk songs
that would go
I've
to the
heard.
Kinks. They wrote this song
the
first.
Thing is, though, like, they take it musically in a different direction. There's a different kind of energy about it, and just the fact that there are female vocals just gender bends it even more than the song already was to begin with. It just oh my god, the second verse, though, I'm not dumb but I don't understand, where it's just a vocal that's happening like way up in the mix, and then the drums, and they're just like rolling along. It's just this strange rickety wagon of a song that like just crashes into a wall by the end of it in the best way possible.
Yeah, the whole gender bed thing is actually kind of one of the funnest elements of that song. Yep. And especially when you consider like what they're talking about in that song. And this is 1979. Like, I don't know how well this song would fly now with some people, like, if it came out.
I play it on my show frequently. Yeah. I can't stop just throwing it in.
It's
like,
pretty addictive.
Need a three-minute song? Here we go, Lola.
I had to skip it, like, a few times when I was listening just to make sure that I was being real with the other songs on here, because, like, every time Lola came on, I was like, oh, great album.
But it
like,
makes sense when you listen to the context of the whole album, especially No Looking, of why they chose to cover that song for this record.
Yeah,
it
definitely
plays incredibly
and off-duty
well
trip
into the themes that is being portrayed on this record.
And to talk about the lyrics a little bit,
which I think are the strongest point, by the way.
The lyrics are across the board are, you know, you might get a sense of silliness from this, but I do think that there are serious topics being addressed, especially on Off-Duty Trip, which is genuinely kind of, it's upsetting. It's a song about a rape trial of a soldier who was given a very, very lenient sentence because he was a soldier. Because of this song's topic, it makes the chorus, join the professionals, the professional, it just subverts it, and it makes it disturbing because it's saying, you know, in the end they say, save the professionals. It's like they're singing this song from the point of view of someone who's defending this soldier. But then you get the verses that are just, woman, you're pinned up on the wall in front of you. And then the next line, a soldier's life is very tough. It's harrowing because you have this description, this raw description of this horrible act, followed by, well, you know, a soldier's life is very tough. You know,
yeah,
we gotta, he's protecting
excuses.
The country. So it's just, you don't even really get that when you first listen to it because it fits in musically with the rest of the album. It's still very, you know, strange and ramshackle, but they're definitely taking a more serious turn on this song. It doesn't clash at all with the rest of the album, but it's one of the most memorable moments, I think.
Can we talk about the closer, though, for real? If we're going in the lyric-wise, the I'm not looking, I'm not talking, and just how they repeat that. God, I... Chills, man. I got chills when I first heard that, because it's just like how relevant that is today, and how crazy that must be.
Adventures Close to Home touches on the same thing, mm-hmm. where that's actually a cover of the song by The Slits, but which is another all-female punk band that came up around the same time. But, you know, that track kind of talking about doing things on your own and being your own person, but it's called Adventures Close to Home. So it's kind of like...
Don't go too far.
Right. It's sort of mocking just a little bit, where it's like, you know, yeah, go off and do your own thing, but what are you really, you're not even going anywhere. Adventure's close to home.
I feel like that's a criticism of the feminist movement that was going on during that time, because there was this big, you know, you'd come out of the late 60s, and now you're going into the 70s, and there was there's this idea of women taking control, but are they really, you know, they're really not straying too far from their, it's almost like they like the idea of being a feminist, but they're really not going to push the envelope very much.
Right. Maybe that's what they were talking about. And I can actually see that, especially considering this is a cover of The Slits, who I definitely think feminism criticizing feminism. It's saying you need to go further, basically,
exactly,
rather than criticizing the idea
itself.
It's like
third wave feminism almost, I feel like.
The thing that really bogs this album down for me is it's amateurish to a fault. These guys are clearly very mature and clearly very talented, not songwriters, but lyricists. I think they write some poetry on here that is super smart, super sharp, very well thought out, and even memorable. However, I think the way they play their instruments sometimes can be way more frustrating than what I was dealing with on Primus. And some of these songs, I know you like that quality of like this really rickety song structure. To me, it doesn't work out on this album. There's a lot of moments on this album where it's like, Jesus, you guys are just hitting your instruments. Like it's like there's no cohesion here. And that really hurts it for me. And I'd be doing a disservice if I came in here and was like, yeah, but I love how free it is. I really don't. I think it hurts a lot of the songs. That's why I said it was an assault
on the entire music making process, because that's what it is.
It is.
I just adore that about this album.
Sometimes the vocals are endearing and sometimes they are pretty much insufferable. I like the sentiment of no looking, and it's grown on me a little more in time, but I still can't say I really like the ending that much. It's a little too frantic for my taste. Adventures Close to Home. Let me get out of the way. Lyrically on here, everything is really good, top notch. Performance wise, Adventures Close to Home is like one of my least favorite songs I've had to listen to for the show. It is just so rickety and like barely produced. Like, I understand the appeal of that. It doesn't appeal to me. Like, I cannot get into it. It is absolutely too untamed to the point where you would really have to, I feel like, already be in love with this band to get into that song to begin with.
I kind of agree with Brian, but not to the further, like,
I do want to give great praise to a couple songs in a minute, though.
Okay.
That aren't Lola, because we've, you know.
Yeah. Well, I admit, in when I was talking earlier, like, this sound and aesthetic isn't my cup of tea, and it's just, I'm not uncomfortable by it, but it's like, this is good, and I respect it, but it's just not what I like. But there are some genuinely catchy and great moments on here that they are doing with the production. One of the songs, Jacob, you'll probably know better than me, where they, like, stutter the chorus. Like, she gets more,
That's In Love. That's not stuttering. That is, like, yeah, moaning. That
is In Love. I love that.
That's like the vocals on that track.
Second favorite song on that album.
That's a great moment.
I just love the way she goes, feeling good, feeling bad. Like, it's and the vocals are mixed so low.
And it's clear that was an artistic choice. Like, they knew what they were doing. I don't think this was definitely.
I love the guitar. Like, it's so simple. Like, it's where the amateuristic works out. You just have like this, just one person just brr, brr, and the other one's just whining away in the background with the other guitar. God, it's awesome.
Yeah, and like I said, No Side to Fall In is an incredibly catchy song that's just great to sing along to.
The drumming on Off Duty Tip had to grow on me, but it really did become one of my favorite moments. And I think it's the whining guitar on Black and White that I love a lot.
Kind of like slide guitar intro.
I like The Void as well, even though the composition here still kind of annoys me. I think they captured a great like mood for this song.
Yeah, and if we're talking about compositions, I have to mention You're a Million, where it's just this dissonance, like same chord just played over and over, and then when it finally breaks into this transition and it speeds up really, really fast, and then it goes back into the slow part, and then it speeds up really fast. It's like,
I like
that really wasn't much of a thing, you know, especially back when the song was being written, that kind of song structure. And then Life on the Line, which has the violin is at its craziest on this track. There's like the pluck strings that happen on the chorus, but there's like a time signature changes going on. It's just getting faster and slower and faster and slower.
This album
strange.
Would not have worked if there was no violin. The violin is such a great choice. I don't know what it is, but I think that really gives this album an identity where it's like, you know, your typical punk lineup, like guitar, bass, drums, vocalist, violinist. Like
the closest comparison that I can make would be like the cello in the Velvet Underground. Like that would be like the closest sound, like this really like lo-fi scratchy violin.
There are moments too, I can't remember what song, but where the guitar sounds like keyboard, like synths are being played here. Do you know what I, you know what I mean?
I'm not sure.
I don't get that anywhere.
I almost, like, it sounds so much like maybe there is a keyboardist here.
Maybe
but
black
I could,
and white, there's like a horn that just wails on in the background.
Yeah, I think like there's a little bit of synth in this too. I
don't think there are any synths. I think there's just something that texturally might
resemble
them. I don't
think they could have afforded a synth by the sound of things.
It's just what it sounded like. I didn't look up like what.
Like we talk about
we
mixing, pretty sure they didn't mix this. Like yeah. I'm pretty sure it's pretty pretty raw. There may be some like slight production, but like this thing sounds super raw, and that's like a quality that is takes more away in my opinion, but I think the album's strengths are really strong because it really brings it up for me. Like when now that we're talking about it, I can see now it's like, yeah, the lyrics are really sharp and like the playing is awful, and but like usually the stuff, the choices they make are so like
playing is awful. No, I'll get angry in a moment. Keep going.
But like, I just think the choices they make are really good with sounds, more or less. If I'm talking less about composition and like they have a basic structure, but like the sounds they pick are really smart and most of the time really grow on me.
Well, you said you're a vocalist guy more than a melody guy, so what do you think of the vocal?
Mixed bag for me. Sometimes I'm really annoyed. Like on No Looking, I'm kind of annoyed most of the time.
Really? Because I think that adds to the what they're trying to get across in the lyrics, and when they get more frantic and frantic, it totally plays into it and makes for a great ending to it.
Sometimes she overdoes it, sometimes she, in my opinion, sometimes she overdoes it like on No Looking, and sometimes she underdoes it like on The Void, which I think is like a good song, but like it's a little underplayed in my opinion. Like I feel like there was a better way to approach it vocally. And then on songs like Off Duty Tip, I think she's doing a great job of like getting across like nothing special in the context of the album, but like I don't know, I just find it more pleasing there. In Love is the best like out there moment far
and away.
What
about Fairy Tale in the Supermarket?
That's a good opener.
I love that track.
I like just the drumming
it's
opening.
It's a great way, and the violin that comes in is just a great.
I like the riff they play, yep, too. That's
it's a great way
riff
to introduce
the album. Yeah, that's a good
album
song. That's a really good song.
So I really, really like music that sounds amateurish like this, but there are definitely ways to do it badly, and there are definitely ways to do it well. I think that the things that allow this album to get away with very rough production, very untrained instrumentation, with the exception of the violin. I think the violinist is probably the most technically able musician in the group at the time, at least. Mm-hmm. Those things are personality, which this album has in spades, a unique kind of style, which this album, there's nothing really that you could, if you had a band that sounded like this with weird post-punky bass lines and skittering production and a violin, everybody, you're the Raincoats, so that sounds like the Raincoats. There's nothing else that really sounds like this album. And then the songwriting is just great across the board. Fairy Tale in the Supermarket, which was their first single, is just a fantastically well-written track. Adventures Close to Home is a great cover, and the two covers on this album are reimagined with their own spin on them, and
they
don't
do what
just
a good cover should do.
Yes, and Lola is just, oh my God, Lola's, that cover is just amazing.
Funny story, when I listened to that song, it got caught in my stuck in my head. Well, got stuck in my head was the Weird Al parody. Yoda. I don't know why, but like I was like humming the melody, and then I just started singing the Weird Al parody instead of the actual song.
I've not heard the original Lola, but like I like this iteration a lot. Like if there are other versions of this, I maybe wouldn't even bother to hear them.
Just, well, you should. It's a great, it's like a, just you know, a great, just like a 60s garage rock tune, but this just really, with the vocals coming in and then coming out and then trading off vocal duties and the drumming coming in, and then, you know, just get some guitar. Like another thing that sets this apart, and it's just what I just mentioned, is the song structure. They are playing around with stuff. These are hardly simple songs. The arrangements musically and the song structure, like maybe it's amateurish from the technical ability of the musicians, but what they're doing with their limited ability is super interesting and unique. So they're proving that you really don't need that much technical ability to be ambitious. And it doesn't sound ambitious right off the bat, but when you really take a look and break these down, it's like, wait, was there a chorus in that track? Or is this just like three verses with a weird breakdown in the middle? Like, there's that all across this album. And it's just, Lola is my favorite track on this thing. I think this is greater than the sum of its parts, where I am just driven to listen to this thing pretty frequently. Like, I could probably just put this album on in any context, in any time, and just be super, super happy with it. It's just one that it's just a sound that I can just fall right into whenever I want to at all. Like, anytime.
All right, so if we're talking about scoring this album, I'm definitely going to give it a strong 7. Is it the best produced album we've ever heard? Of course not. I feel like this is an important album. As someone who cut his teeth, I lived in Seattle in 1992. I grew up on alternative music, and I listened to this album, and it's like listening to alternative music as a child before it grew up. That said, I would score it higher, but when I listen to this album, I listen to it, I appreciate it, I recognize its importance, but if I want to pick something to listen to, I'm going to pick Nirvana. I'm going to pick Slater Kinney, because it's the progression of this. This is very nascent to me. I want the next iteration of it, I think, is probably how I would best put it.
I'm going to completely agree with Joe and give it a strong 7 as well. And more of it's more simple than that. It's just, while I do completely respect this album and think lyrically it's strong as hell, but just sonically and production-wise, it's just not for me. And I would probably want to look at their other catalog. I don't know if you're familiar.
They get more experimental.
Okay.
They get weirder.
But yeah, I do agree, Joe. It just makes me want to listen to what it inspired rather than just listening to the beginning of it. Does that make sense? I totally agree with Joe on that point. But a strong 7 nonetheless. I did enjoy listening to this for how many times I did.
I kind of push and pull on my opinion on this thing, because, like, on the one hand, you know, the song topics, the song writing, and, like, the songwriting in regards to the lyrics, I don't mind the atypical structures at all. I think it's fine. It doesn't hurt the album that doesn't have a bunch of choruses on it, because I don't think it's an album that should have a bunch of choruses on it, because Lola sticks out like a sore thumb in a great way. But at the same time, I just think the music they're playing around these songs sometimes can be really irritating. And it's not that I don't, because in some ways I connect with these lyrics, you know, like there are moments like The Void is a moment that I look at and I'm like, I get what they're talking about here. It's a very easily relatable moment. And maybe it's just because the topics are specific to women that I'm having a hard time, like, you know, putting myself in that position. And I'm more of an observer. But I just think the music they're playing around, some of the lyrics that I do like, displeases me. And I can't ever say that it...
I love that word. This displeases me.
Yeah, it's like, that's kind of arrogant, actually. I don't like that.
It's so condescending.
Yeah, it is condescending. Like, I just don't like it. Like, on its face, like, a lot of the time the music in here, I just don't like it that much. There are some standout moments. I love when the violins were just being scraped away into pieces. The drumming throughout the whole thing is good, and the moments where it does stick out, it's one of my favorite parts about it. The guitar playing is super rudimentary, but, I mean, it shines and stinks at various points. I just have mixed feelings on this thing. I've grown to like it more, but I don't know if I could grow to like it more than I already do, for the reasons I've said. I can't really say I'm feeling more than, like, a decent to strong 6 on this thing.
I'll accept this. You have avoided my wrath.
Like, and it's complicated, because it's like, I like the lyrical topics and the way they write the songs. It's like a Minutemen situation where it's like, I don't quite love the Minutemen, but I really like and understand what they're doing. I think their playing lends itself more to me because they know what they're doing, but just...
That's too true.
Okay, so the only thing that could make the production on this album better is if it was recorded on an answering machine.
Right.
I adore
I thought it was.
I adore the atmosphere, the rudimentary nature. I think that the cheap, lo-fi nature of this album is fantastic. I love it. I don't think that any better production would... I think it would make this album worse. I adore the fact that this sounds like it was recorded in a shed. Yeah, I can just keep listening to this album all day. I was gonna do an 8 on this one, but listening to it in preparation and really thinking about it, this thing's like a light 9. Like, I just adore this band and their ethos and what they're doing on this album.
It's gonna be a weird one.
I'm really regretting suggesting it.
We're gonna be doing children's albums.
Oh boy.
I'm going to be doing the 1994 release, Yummy Yummy by The Wiggles.
I'm doing a record simply titled The Album by The Teletubbies.
I am going to re-listen a little bit and we're going to do a collection of like folk children's music standards interpreted by Jerry Garcia and David Grisman in a bluegrass style. It's an album called Not For Kids Only.
And I mercifully will not be on that show.
This has been Unwarranted Music Opinions. I'm Jacob Lindberg here with Brian Courtney.
I'm here.
Say goodbye, Brian.
Goodbye.
And Chaz Jenkins.
Goodbye.
And we were glad to have Joe Lewis on the show this week.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was cool, man.
Join us again next time.